Only in the silence of the word, only in dark the light, only in dying life, bright the hawk's flight, on the empty sky. And this is the 5-Point Podcast. Did that make any sense to you? Neither did this movie. I am Burke, and with me...
as always, is Bobcat. Yes, the 5-Point Podcast, where we put the A in ad hominem.
That's not our catchphrase, and it never will be.
It can be a catchphrase. No. We're allowed to have more than one catchphrase.
We don't even have a catchphrase.
Burke, you can't turn away a free catchphrase when you hear one.
The courts have already denied us. You know this.
Only in Zanzibar.
We live in Zanzibar!
As far as you know. So yes, hello everyone. It's time once again for the 5-Point Podcast for our review of Tales from Earthsea.
Hooray!
Now, for those of you who haven't been with us before...
you're welcome.
Well, first off, hi, thanks for listening to us. We look at anime TV shows, and this is our first movie, and we analyze them on 5 different points. First impression, story, characters, presentation, which is everything from voice acting to background music to animation, and final thoughts. Now, before, we've looked at the beginnings of various series, but this is our first movie. So for those of you who haven't seen Tales from Earthsea and care about spoilers, this is not the podcast to listen to.
No, we're going to spoil everything, though. I can just about sum up the entire movie right now. First act, dragons. Second act, farm work? Third act, dragons. It's not as good as I made it sound.
So, we'll have a moment of silence for anyone who wants to leave now. And the moment is over.
Good. Good riddance.
Spoilers ahoy as we go into point one. First impressions. Burke, what were your first impressions?
Yeah, actually, it's best if I do this. Because I didn't really have any. I was expecting a good movie. I was expecting a competent movie. One with a good story. Some nice animation. A likable main character. It didn't really give me any of these things, but it tried. Except on the story. But my first impressions were... nothing, really, because I just knew the reputation of the other movies. And I was looking forward to the movie we're supposed to be reviewing, Ponyo, but could not due to other things beyond our control.
Right. Netflix was kind of a jerk that way. They took Ponyo off of their instant streaming just in time for us to actually get to it.
Hooray!
So I picked another Studio Ghibli movie, which ties into my first impressions. I didn't really know anything about this particular movie. The thing about Studio Ghibli is that, and apologies if I'm saying it wrong, I'm doing my best assumption of how the Japanese would pronounce those letters. The thing about Ghibli is that they're the Pixar of Japan. Not in the sense of being CGI, but they're the animation studio that everyone loves. Every time they come out with a movie, it does gangbusters over there, you know, as far as... at least as gangbusters as cartoon releases limited to Japan do, which I believe Earthsea, according to Wikipedia, Earthsea was one of the top 5 movies in Japan that year.
Bobcat, can we just agree for you never to say gangbusters again?
You're my homie.
You're too white. Stop it.
Anyway, they have an excellent track record. Miyazaki, their main director guy, has an impeccable reputation. He is the Walt Disney of Japan. This also had another good thing going for it, which was it's based on the Earthsea novels by Ursula Le Guin, which, while I haven't read them, I'm aware of them because, for one thing, I've read of people accusing Aragon of ripping them off with some of the magical concepts. But also I know of it from this audiobook I have, which is a professor who actually teaches a class in fantasy literature talking about her and praising her.
I do not really know of them. Though I did read Aragon. It was frightfully boring.
Yeah, Burke was expecting good things from the reputation. I had higher expectations from the reputation, because I knew that this didn't just have one good group behind it. It was based on a well-regarded fantasy series. So it really should have been the best of both worlds. A good studio does something with good source material. Unfortunately, this brings us to point two, story. Now, an amusing thing about the title that occurred to me is that while the title is Tales from Earthsea, there is approximately one half of a tale in this movie.
That we actually get to see.
Obviously something happened off camera that was interesting.
A lot of somethings.
That's some things that would actually make things make sense.
And good movies.
Enough pre-bashing. Let's actually get into the plot.
Okay, the story begins with two dragons showing up in the middle of a random generic fantasy... Blar. Fantasy Sea.
Fantasy Sea.
Fantasy Sea. Fantasy Sea. Fantasy Sea. As a ship, I think it's a pirate ship because I'm just wanting to assume that they're pirates.
It would make things much more interesting.
Yes. Anyways, they see the dragons and they comment about them and the dragons fight, and it's actually a fairly dynamic opening. Very interesting, very well done. You're never going to see any of these characters again, including the dragons.
The point of the dragon scene is that it establishes some of the mythos of the world. They see the two dragons fighting, and the people on the ship all like, two dragons fighting? Dragons never fight with each other. Because apparently, in this world, at one time, dragons and humans were the same race. And the humans loved the land and the sea, and they were greedy and jerky. But the dragons were noble and good, and so they decided to live in the sky and...
fire.
That's right. They chose the elements of sky and fire.
So apparently they live in airborne volcanoes, which also would have made a much more better movie.
No. Flying mountains don't necessarily make for a good movie. Point in case, Avatar.
No, we're not. No. Anyways, that failure aside...
Right, so there's our world. It's a fantasy world, looks like medieval Europe. The philosophy is much more Eastern-style stuff.
Then we meet a powerful king who is really noble and just and aloof and other things. And he's talking with his people about how he has to go and help the people of his kingdom. Help clean up the area. There's plagues and disease and famine.
The land is out of balance.
The land is out of balance, and we learn more exposition from a sorcerer character who will never show up again. And then the king is stabbed by his son, though we don't really learn who did the stabbing until about halfway into the movie.
I'm still confused about who was actually behind the stabbing.
Because we see the son doing it, and then we immediately go to the son in the desert on a llama horse.
Now, one weird thing about what they chose to do with the dub here, and I don't know if that's the case in the anime too, or excuse me, the original Japanese audio too. Okay, so fantasy world, you get an opportunity to make things that did not quite exist in the real world. So did they actually have real horses? I know they had real cows.
Yeah, they had real cows.
I don't think they had real horses. The horses look like plus-sized llamas, and also a bunch of people rode bison instead of horses. You know what? That's actually pretty cool. There was a movie, it's based on a tome, it's called Tales of Earthsea, Buffalo Jones.
Yes, we are nerds, for the record.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Google Buffalo Jones right now.
You really, really should. It's a really, really, it's a better movie than this.
Yes.
Anyways, to continue with the plot.
Sorry, but, okay, my point was, they go to the effort of animating unique things, and then the dub just calls them horses.
Yeah.
Anyways, you're right, we drifted. So we meet our first actual character, who we'll get more into the specifics of the characters later, but his name is Sparrowhawk. After about 20 minutes of him wandering around with the king's son, named Aaron, Sparrowhawk is... He reminds me of Qui-Gon Jinn, actually. In the sense of, yeah, he's much more Qui-Gon Jinn than original Star Wars trilogy Obi-Wan Kenobi in that. You get the impression that he's a sort of rough-and-tumble mentor type.
He actually does things instead of vaguely wave his stick around and then die.
Sparrowhawk is pretty cool, but he wanders around with Aaron for a while. Now, in this time, nothing is mentioned about the scene. You know, remember, the way we were introduced to Aaron was someone said, oh, Aaron's been kind of off lately. I don't know what's up with him. And then he stabs his father.
The thing of it is, we don't even know that it's him. It's just this random brown-haired kid who just runs out of nowhere, stabs the king, and the way it's shot, you're not even sure that the character we see wandering around in the desert is the same one who stabbed the king. Because he looks slightly different. He looks older.
I don't know. Okay, I guess some time could have passed. I'm not sure about that. I would say that you can surmise it because he has the king's magic sword, but the movie doesn't like to spell things out for you.
No.
So Sparrowhawk and Aaron wander the land for a while, winding up in Port Town, where we come across wonderful fantasy elements, because after all, fantasy is supposed to take us out of the real world, like slavery and magical drugs.
And drug dealers.
Who Aaron isn't smart enough to say no to.
Seriously, he's 2 seconds away from just taking a handful of drugs. The kid is not exactly fit for evolution.
So then, for some reason, Sparrowhawk decides to let Aaron wander on his own. I guess Aaron is being kind of mopey and sad, so Sparrowhawk is trying to be nice to him.
Or something.
And Aaron comes across a group of slavers trying to capture a girl whose face is scarred by burns, in exactly the same style as Zuko from Avatar, the good Avatar.
No, it wasn't exactly the same style. This is pathetic and barely looks like she's... It looks like she has a rash at worst.
It looks like she forgot to cover that side of her face with sunscreen.
Yeah, it looks like a mild sunburn, not even a bad one. And it's not even the same shape.
It's just the first thing that made me think of. In my notes, I called her alternate universe gender-bent Zuko.
I don't agree with that, but she is our, for the record, honorary pink-haired girl. Because no one actually has pink hair.
Which is a first for us.
Yes.
So, we don't learn her name until later, but her name is Teru, which is spelled T-H-E-R-R-U, because it's a fantasy name. You can't just spell it in a straightforward manner. That would be silly.
No. But it's also the spoiler for later.
Teru, even though he just saved her, he did so in a weird way. He didn't so much fight the villains as to dodge around them for a bit. Then he scared them by convincing them that he was a crazy man who didn't care about life, and so, you know, you don't want to fight someone who has nothing to lose.
He also smacked them a few times with his sword that is stuck in a sheath. We'd actually mention this if it was important. It's not.
Actually, no, she doesn't even yell at him. She just runs off after glaring at him.
Yes, and then he goes to sit down and daydreams, gets kicked in the stomach, and taken as a slave.
No, you left out a step. He went down to the docks. He didn't go back to the hotel. Sparrowhawk had told him, go back to the hotel.
I apologize. Instead, he just sat down at the docks on the steps in plain view of everyone, takes a nap, gets kicked in the stomach, and thrown in a slave pit.
Right, he wakes up sometime later that night with the same slavers who have brought company.
He's not smart enough to breed.
No. But fortunately, Sparrowhawk uses magic to save him.
Just him, though. The rest of the slaves can rot.
Sparrowhawk says, I've undone their bonds. What happens to them now is their business.
And we learn that what happens to them is that the slaves immediately recaptured them.
Did we learn that? I forgot.
Yeah, Cheech said so, remember?
Okay, so far, this is about minute 40 of the movie, 30 of the movie.
About that.
And so far, what we've learned is that
our main character is a doofus.
Our main character is a doofus. We've learned that our Qui-Gon equivalent has no problem leaving people to rot, which I guess was the case with the actual Qui-Gon when it came to two, but I'm willing to overlook that.
I'm sure you would.
And we've learned that while chicks dig scars, chicks with scars don't dig him. Him, Aaron, that is.
That didn't even begin to work. I am ashamed of you.
I'm sorry.
You should be.
Okay, we've established that the land is out of balance. The world is in trouble. Our heroes proceed to go and do farm work at the farm of someone named Tenar, who is implied to be Sparrowhawk's not quite wife.
She's our other honorary pink-haired girl of the movie.
Yeah, Tenar is way too boring to be a pink-haired girl.
She's just sort of the motherly witch lady. She's just sort of there.
Right. Now, we learn a few things while we're at the farm. We learn that Aaron has never done a hard day's work, and so his hands get covered in blisters immediately. Our heroes, ladies and gentlemen.
A doofus.
And we learn the backstory of Teru, as well as learning her name. She doesn't like talking to strangers because 5 years before, her parents had abandoned her.
After abusing her.
Yes, that's where she got her burns from.
Somehow.
Yes, and Tanar has been taking care of her ever since. This was a good use of 20 minutes. Maybe even a half hour. We mostly just saw scenery and learned these things gradually.
Now, I will mention, we did get to meet one other character, probably the best character of the movie, Cobb.
Cobb is our villain.
Don't know a whole lot about him just yet. We'll talk about his voice acting later. But he is pretty good. I'd say he's threatening.
Aha! The dub did turn him into a woman. Or from a woman to a man.
What? No.
Wikipedia says the voice actress for this guy was a woman.
No. You still a guy.
I guess Goku was voiced by a woman, so...
I was about to make that comparison. So unless you want to say Goku has a vagina.
Okay, fine. He's very effeminate because, you know, it's a Japanese fantasy-style thing post-Sephiroth.
No. I'm not going to let that stand. Griffith came before Sephiroth.
Okay, fine. Post-Griffith from Berserk, the evil fantasy villain has to be effeminate for some reason.
I don't agree with that, but it is something of a trope.
So, Cobb is after Eren and Sparrowhawk for reasons unknown just yet.
He's also the other one who has a story that's actually interesting that we never get to learn.
He's the boss of Hare, who is the slaver who was trying to take our heroes earlier.
A.K.A. Cheech.
Yes, we'll get to his voice actor later. It's one of my favorite parts of the movie. So...
From here, nothing really happens for a very long stretch of time. It's just the main character boy is...
Mopey.
Mopey, he's just sort of... hanging around, Sparrowhawk is going off on his own thing, the one chick disappears only for the main character to find her and she's singing and somehow they bond because he was creepily watching her sing.
And he confessed to killing his father.
Yes, and then he confesses to killing his father and she goes from hating him, despising him, and all this other stuff to, well, they're love interests now.
Yeah, or something.
Something. Though I will say this outright, she wears the pants in the family. We'll see that at the ending.
Yes, most definitely. So then, of course, Sparrowhawk goes investigating, and he concludes that Cobb is the... Actually, no, he doesn't conclude this. This is something that I had to figure out after the fact. When this is the central conflict of your movie, I should not have to do homework and think about it that hard.
No.
Now, I'll jump ahead here a bit. Cobb is the one that's disrupting the world. That's all I can figure. Because if Cobb isn't the one disrupting the world, then the first half hour of the movie was a complete waste.
Yeah, he's trying to become immortal, which is unnatural.
And the movie's philosophy, metaphysics, whatever you want to call it, is such that if you try to hold on to life, you don't really preserve it so much as you stop life from flowing out of you into everything else. So I guess just one guy becoming immortal is enough to throw the entire universe out of whack. And for some reason, Eren is the key to this? Because Eren also wants to be immortal?
Somehow. Except not.
So Cobb kidnaps Eren, and Sparrowhawk comes to save him. Because Cobb somehow made his tower anti-Sparrowhawk, Sparrowhawk's magic stops working. And he winds up capturing everybody except Teru.
Yeah.
And then Teru meets a character I forgot to mention, who is barely a character in a distinct sense because...
It's not even a character.
I would have liked some explanation for this. She runs into a being that is... I couldn't tell whether he was... He's basically a side of Eren. Eren got so disturbed or scared or something that all of the light in his body was driven out. And so all that light is now following him around like a shadow. So Eren has a clone who is a shadow made of his internal light.
Yeah.
Who, despite acting really creepy the first time we meet him, helps Teru by giving her the magic sword and saying, "Give it to me." Teru naturally says, "But you're already here." "No, I'm not. I'm in there."
Look, this is... It's farm work. That's... It's riding farm work. They're just trying to trudge through the fields to get to the climax. And in doing so, they're throwing up a lot of mud that they don't want to address.
Teru gets in, gets him to man up, sort of.
He drugs him.
Oh, I wish it was drugs. Handing him a handful full of those pills would have actually made that scene worth something in the end. Which would be hilarious, yes. Actually. But no, she just convinces him that life is worth living even if life is short. Now, we've brushed on that. The philosophy behind the movie is that if you try to extend human life, you basically stop living and everything around you stops living too. Death is a necessary part of life.
Alright. And
so this seems to be the theme of the movie. First Sparrowhawk tells this to Aaron, then Teru tells this to Aaron, and Aaron finally believes it. And Aaron confronts Cobb. A little side note, Aaron manages to open up the magic sword that his father had and cuts off Cobb's hand, thus weakening him, but it's barely important.
It's not important at all.
Aaron says that, you know, Cobb, you can't do this. You can't extend your life. You're messing with things that aren't supposed to be messed with. Death is a necessary part of life. That's why life is so great, because it can be cut short.
And the best thing you can say about the movie is that it was consistent to the message up to that point.
Right. It had a point of view. It was keeping that point of view. The hero had come to accept that point of view. It was kind of a lame acceptance, because we didn't know why he was so afraid of death to start with, but we'll get to that later.
And also, the story so far has been flaky, but fairly together. It's like, up to this point, it doesn't feel like we've missed too much. It just feels like we jumped into the middle of an adventure. Nothing insane has happened yet.
Right. And then Cobb kills Teru, right after Aaron says that. Now, when I was watching that, I was thinking to myself, oh wow, they're actually committed to that message.
Yeah.
The villain, who had just been told death is a natural part of life, the fact that life is fragile is what makes it precious. You can't hold on to life. Just immediately turned around and killed the hero's girlfriend.
Yeah, it was on the level of Green Goblin. And then she gets up and turns into a dragon and saves the day.
Yes, that's right. Not only can you reverse death if you're a dragon, apparently. I don't know what humans found in the earth and ocean that was so wonderful, but I guess they gave up on immortality.
Because she's a dragon now. She just turns...
She goes from neck broken to turning into a giant CGI dragon.
She's a dragon. Just bam, dragon, end of movie.
End of movie. Well, no. Aaron says, I'm going to go turn myself in for the bad stuff I did. And then you cut to them doing more farm work, because that's what the movie wants you to take away from this. Farm work.
Oh, God. It was... Also, the dragons from the start of the movie had nothing to do with the rest of the movie. Teru turning into a dragon just came the crap out of nowhere.
I don't think they even animated the transformation scene beyond her growing wings.
No, and they didn't even do that. They just had, like, light in the shape of wings. And then bam! Dragon saves the day!
She goes from angel to dragon in 60 seconds flat. Or, no, 10 seconds flat.
Zebra Man had less of a Deus Ex Machina ending.
For those of you who don't know, and you should go out and watch Zebra Man, Zebra Man is about a superhero who can't fly, and the only way that he'll win in the end is if he can fly, and he just learns to fly by throwing himself off of high objects.
There's more to it than that, but this isn't a Zebra Man review. Also, he becomes a giant zebra Pegasus unicorn and saves the day. And it still makes sense compared to this. This is the moment that really kind of ruined the entire episode.
Yeah, because up till then, we were willing to give this movie the benefit of the doubt. It was just a slow movie.
Yeah. No, then it insulted us.
I mean, if there had been any hint that Teru had been a dragon up to then, if there had been any hint that dragons could assume human form beyond the fact that humans and dragons used to be the same species, that itself isn't even an explanation, because that's like saying, well, humans and chimpanzees share a common ancestor, so therefore humans can assume a chimpanzee-like shape.
I'm going to become a gorilla right now!
Mind you, that would be a pretty cool superpower, but...
I'd be Beast Boy, but extremely limited. That would not be cool.
Gorillas are cool. But no, there's no explanation. There's no explanation for why a dragon is living a quiet farm life with what's her name?
Doesn't even matter.
With Tenar. There's no explanation of why Aaron felt so bad. No explanation of why he killed his father. The closest we have to a plot here is that Cobb and the Archmagus Sparrowhawk knew each other.
And they had a cat fight.
Yes.
We've spent like 20 minutes talking about the plot, when really you can just sum it up like this. First act, dragons. Second act, farm work? Third act, dragons.
So, that's the story. Dragons, regicide, farm work, dragons. With very little explained. This was taken from the plot of a couple of Ursula Le Guin's books, but they combined them into an unholy fusion.
With an original villain.
Right. It's kind of similar to the complaints that some people had about the movie adaptation of Scott Pilgrim, where they tried to shove an entire series worth of character development into an hour and a half. Except this is worse, because I'm going to assume that three books of the Earthsea series take up more pages than Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, I would assume so. But all of that aside, the story was an incoherent mess. Just meandered around when it wanted to and didn't really resolve a frickin' thing. Oh, except Cobb may have died because of a dragon.
Yeah, that was confusing too.
Speaking of Cobb!
Oh, actually, one last thing I want to say about story. Is that as somebody who's seen a good number of Studio Ghibli movies, my personal favorite is his Lupin the Third movie, Castle of Cagliostro. The story here had a lot of recycled elements. Like, little visual things as well as story things. I don't know how much of that is from Le Guin and how much of that is from the director, who we should have mentioned before.
We'll get to that in number four.
You're right, that is part of presentation. But it's just, the movie felt like it was made of cast-off remnants of other stories.
It was a cobbled-together piece of crap.
Speaking of cobble...
No, you don't get to do that. I'm sorry. Characters, now!
Okay, so I guess the first character we should talk about is Aaron, because of all the characters...
He's mopey and emo. Next!
No. Burke, we haven't gotten into the extreme inconsistencies here.
Mopey, emo, angry, Hulk-like, and killed his father. Next.
Burke, okay, just let me share some thoughts here.
No.
Burke, the people at home deserve to hear just
how... They do not!
Yes, they deserve to hear just how badly written this character is.
How did they deserve that? Did they kick your cat?
Yes, they did. Every single reader I have came over to my house and kicked my cat.
We don't have readers! This is not a visual medium. You are failing with your words.
Me am speak good. Anyways.
Get off the Hulk on phonics.
Boy eat waffle!
Oh god, now you're quoting other jokes.
So the thing about Aaron is that he is extremely inconsistent. This is because of story elements we talked about. That is, it is a decent story to have a character be afraid of death, do something bad because they think that they have a shot at immortality, then come to grips with their mortality.
This is not one of those characters.
Right. We are never told why exactly Aaron fears death. We are never told how his being afraid of death managed to create another clone of himself.
We're never even told why he killed his father. He doesn't even know.
Yeah, he just says, I got angry.
And I stabbed my father, apparently.
Yes. We don't know what he sees in Teru. Like, I guess aside from the fact that she can actually tolerate him. We don't feel like the lesson that he learns, mortality is necessary, life is precious, it felt less like he learned it more than it was said to him often enough that he decided to just repeat it back.
Yeah, and then he just was completely thrown out the window because she turned into a dragon.
And saved the day for him.
Yeah, he didn't do anything, really.
We could have just had a movie with Sparrowhawk and Tenar and Teru and had roughly the same story.
Yeah. It'd actually have less crap in it.
Speaking of Sparrowhawk...
He's a mentor.
I found myself actually liking Sparrowhawk quite a bit.
Yeah, he was one of the better characters, and despite all the Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn related jokes we keep making, He doesn't die.
No, that's actually kind of unique now that I think about it. What I like about him is that a lot of characters get powerful and then they'll get extreme magic or whatever, and they'll get this idea that they're above manual labor and such. Now, apparently Sparrowhawk, on his off time, goes to Tenar's farm and helps out.
I don't know what he does otherwise, but yeah, it's actually a man of the salt or something. Imagine I said that correctly.
Yes. I mean, that's a unique combination in fantasy stuff. Usually, if the wizard is not a rich guy up in a tower somewhere selling potions, you get this impression that he's a hermit type begging for scraps from people and mooching. No. Sparrowhawk feeds himself.
He farms. Probably eats slavers. I'm not entirely sure on that.
Yeah. Next, I suppose we should briefly touch on Tenar.
She's a mother character.
Yeah, that's about all I have to say. All of my notes about her are about how boring and bland she is.
Her dress does not exactly suit her. Makes her look very frumpy.
Yes.
But that, I guess, goes more into number four.
We'll that's more like a medieval dressy type thing.
Yeah.
So next up, Teru the Dragon Girl.
She's very, 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 very bipolar.
Okay, we said that Aaron had no reason for his opinions. He didn't care about life because... off camera.
Cat? No, Miss Kitty.
Sorry, Burke's being attacked by his cat at the moment. Anyways, Teru, you can sort of see with her backstory why things are happening. She doesn't like Aaron at first because he said that he doesn't care about life, when she's all about the life. And it's the weirdest thing. She doesn't warm up to Aaron until he admits that he killed his father.
First he has to creepily stalk her and watch her sing without her knowing. Then he tells her that he murdered his father in cold blood for no reason at all. Then she warms up to him. Why?
It's reverse order. You should be nice to the guy who saved you from being taken and raped by slavers.
Yes, that was the thing that Bobcat skipped over earlier. Cheech wanted to rape her to begin with. She looks 12.
Or that's you. That's a knock against that character.
He's a slaver! He doesn't need any more knocks. He is completely knocked up, okay?
That's a good point. I'm not going to take that joke bait. Anyway,
he's Junior.
And then Teru is a dragon for some reason. This doesn't make any sense in the terms of the plot. This does not make sense in terms of the plot whatsoever.
It just kind of happens.
So being a dragon is not actually part of her character at all, which it should be. Fantasy writing 101. If you are going to make a character non-human, give us a good reason for them not to be human. If you can't accomplish what you're trying to do with the character and still have them be completely human, then you haven't made them non-human enough to justify it.
Then there was no hint about the fact.
No, in fact, like, she was friendly with the sheep and...
all the animals loved her.
Right, which... yeah, so there wasn't even any indication that she was secretly a giant 60-foot tall monster.
In fact, if anything, I'd wonder if she was a druid.
Yeah, I would have been less surprised if Aaron turned out to be a dragon. A
little bit. It would have gave him an actual character arc or something.
So that's our main cast. Notice how we've had a lot less to say about our main cast, who, all four of them, in theory, should have completed a character arc.
It was a movie, too. This isn't like Heat Guy J, where they had an entire 23-episode series to wrap everything up.
And where we can't say... what happened after that because we didn't watch it for the review.
Yeah, who knows? Dice might have become a good character. Heat Guy may have actually become, you know, the main character. We don't know, but here...
for Baka and Test, our main character might have become more competent over time.
We don't need to... we're sticking with Heat Guy J because it's another disappointment.
Okay. No, we have seen everything that Tales from Earthsea had to show us.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm going to have to take a stance similar to SF Debris. If it's not in the movie, I don't really care. Because I'm not going to do homework to research a movie that I didn't really like to begin with.
The entirety of my research was to look up the Wikipedia page, which barely qualifies as research to start with. And that was just so that I would have the list of characters' names in front of me.
Yes, yes, yes.
Speaking of... let's move on to Cobb.
We still can't get into what really makes him a good character, but really, he's kind of a generic villain. He wants to live forever. He's not afraid to look ugly to do it. And is pretty clearly not a fan of women. In fact, he says as much.
Which, that's a good message to send the kids at home.
Clearly. Ah, well.
Now, I will say that Cobb is a pretty effective villain.
Yeah.
Even if he is kind of generic fantasy. They made him up for the movie, so I don't know if that's why. Because, you know, they weren't converting hundreds of pages of fantasy stuff into an hour and a half. They were just making stuff out of whole cloth.
Even then, you can't use the novel thing on Cobb because he wasn't in the novels.
Right.
He was movie only, apparently.
Cobb was pretty effective. With a better protagonist to go off against, he probably would have been... He would have been a great villain.
Yeah, A-list.
Yep. And I think the final character that's really worth mentioning is Hare.
Cheech!
Hare is probably one of the more interesting characters in the movie, which, mind you, that isn't saying a whole lot, but I enjoy him. He didn't really have a character arc. He was just a sniveling, cowardly villain type, quintessential bully.
I really couldn't get into him because his very first scene, he was trying to rape a 12-year-old girl.
That just made him more of a stereotypical flunky. But he was a stereotypical flunky who builds himself up and then keeps getting deflated. Because he was getting beat on by Captain Emo repeatedly.
And trust me, to have that happen to you is the height of emasculation.
Yep. So that's characters. This is not a very rich group.
Not a well-developed group. Which brings us to number 4!
Presentation.
No, kitty cat. No, you cannot be in the review.
While Burke tries to hurt his cat, something I've been alluding to is that this movie was not directed by Hayao Miyazaki, although he did come up with the story concept. Hayao Miyazaki, the Walt Disney of Japan, had been busy with Howl's Moving Castle, which is a movie I would actually recommend, which is also, interestingly enough, a work based on either American or European fantasy novel. Now, this was directed by first-time director Goro Miyazaki, his son, and it shows.
Oh, that's not exactly fair, but yeah, this really lacked in direction, which it also lacked in writing. It was just really poorly handled, but the thing I really...
Right. Well, Goro was also partially responsible for the screenplay.
It was just poorly handled, and the director really should have done better. But one of my main issues actually comes with the animation, because the backgrounds are beautiful to look at. They're really, really well done, but they're the only thing. The rest of it is very generic animation. In fact, quite honestly, I'd say Heat Guy J has far superior animation to this.
There are two possibilities here. Either anime has caught up with Studio Ghibli, or this was not a good effort by them. Or both. Because compare, say, what was the contemporary? Compare My Neighbor Totoro to DBZ. The animation is smooth. There's actually has a budget. It looks like the sort of thing where part of the appeal of the movies done by Studio Ghibli and Hayao Miyazaki is just watching the intricate animations. You can tell that a lot of care has been put into it.
Yeah. Here, the characters just all look kind of generic, with the exception of some really, really ugly ones. In fact, to be honest, I thought Sparrowhawk and the King were the same guy.
It wouldn't have been too surprising, actually, now that you mention it. This movie had a thing for mustaches.
Yeah. The main difference between the two was that Sparrowhawk didn't have as full of a beard as the King and had a scar on his face. That was it. Other than that, they could have been twins. It was very undefined, and I want to say blobbish, but that doesn't seem correct.
Well, speaking of blobbish, when I mentioned earlier that this movie felt like it was made of cast-off parts from other Studio Ghibli movies. One of Cobb's things that he does is he turns into a blob. The animation is pretty much identical to the style used by the sludge monster in Spirited Away. Pretty much everything I saw in this movie looked like it had been taken and recycled from an earlier Studio Ghibli project. The character designs looked the same. It could just be that it almost felt like they were being too slavish in trying to look like one of Hayao's movies.
Yeah, or that, or just a generic fantasy anime.
And now the CGI for the dragons was actually pretty good.
Yes.
Japanese CGI isn't usually all that impressive.
It was really good here, though. It was a lot less obvious than, say, Heat Guy J's.
But the regular animation in Heat Guy J outdid the regular animation in this.
Definitely.
Consider for that for a moment, that a TV show outdid the animation in a movie. And Heat Guy J, I wouldn't say, it had some good points, but absolutely wonderful animation was not one of them.
No. But at least you could tell every single character apart. No one looked like they were a clone of anyone else. Especially the main characters.
Let's see here. The music. Now this time obviously there, well, I guess there was an opening and closing theme. Technically.
I didn't mind the music too much.
Nope. It sounded very Lord of the Rings-ish.
It was just generic fantasy music.
And there was a nice enough credits song, like there always is in these Miyazaki movies.
I did not bother to listen to it because, frankly, I'd already watched it for pretty much 2 hours. I was done with the movie.
Yeah, that was one of the longest 2 hours I'd ever seen.
It gave up on me, so I gave up on it. Freaking dragon.
Music, nothing much to comment on there. Animation, the backgrounds were the high point.
Yeah. Even then, after the first, like, 30 minutes or so, the background animation started to just sort of blend in.
Yeah.
So even that started to suffer, but voice acting!
This is the most interesting part of the presentation for me. I forgot to mention this earlier. These movies are distributed in the U.S. by Disney. So that means that whenever they bring one of these movies over, one, it actually gets a theatrical release, and two, they get a... not big name, but moderate name U.S. actors to get in there.
William Dafoe as Cobb! There, I just ruined your entire build-up. Ah!
Oh. Even though Cobb was apparently voiced by a woman in the Japanese version.
I don't know, William Dafoe makes a nice lady. You've seen that movie.
No, I haven't. I'd thank you not to actually give me a name to... in case
we're
I did see it
we're gonna watch it later,
first.
Folks, don't worry.
Oh.
Anyways.
And of course, like we kept mentioning with Hare, the slaver rapist, he's voiced by Cheech Marin. That's part of what made him such... That's part of what made me like him.
It's the only part that made me interested to see him not die.
Right.
He's Cheech.
Cheech is great to listen to.
Cheech.
He elevates bad stuff.
Cheech. Cheech. Let's see here. Who was Timothy Dalton again?
Timothy Dalton was Sparrowhawk.
Thought so.
He did a good job.
I can sum it up like this, really. All the characters had voices that really did fit their character, including the kids. The only real problem I have with the kids is that they were very mumbly. And honestly, that kind of fits with them.
Yeah. And Teru, there were a couple lines that she delivered that sounded flat.
Yeah. But, well, let's face it, she's a dragon.
Yeah.
Freaking hate you, Taylor.
And actually, another thing, speaking of acting, this is the dub's problem.
Acting!
There were a couple of lines in there that felt a little clumsy. Let me go through my notes. I'm gonna cut up this part. I'm gonna cut up this part.
I apologize, folks. We're never gonna do this again.
I'm gonna cut up this part.
No, stop that. Stop that. Okay, I apologize for that, folks. You'll never have to listen to him do that again.
Oh, I'm going to cut all of that out.
No, you're not, because I'm going to keep referencing it throughout the rest of this review. So, yeah, remember when he was humming? Yeah. Yeah, he was humming about 56 minutes into this review. Keep that in mind.
Okay, I can't find it. Rats. Stupid note.
You hoped for no reason.
Wait a minute, I know how to find it. Okay.
Thrill! Bobcat is unprofessional!
Okay, seriously, I'm just going to cut this out.
No, you're not!
Yes, I will.
No, I'm not letting you.
Okay, so a couple of examples of clunky dialogue. I despise people who don't care about life.
Just in case he tries to cut this out, he spent like a minute unprofessionally looking for his notes and humming. It was amazing.
I wish there were more decent people in the world.
It was the best ever.
We'll see what I feel like putting into it.
Oh, I'm not going to stop talking about it now. This is going to be the rest of my review, peppered with disappointment.
But there was one thing where they repeated the same words in one sentence after another that I can't find now.
Why would you even hum that anyways?
Because I like humming.
Yes, and I'm going to make sure you keep it.
At the very least, I'm going to keep you harping on me about it. But anyways, yeah, dub slightly clunky, but that could just be the original bad script's fault.
Yeah, and really, it's just a matter of translation. And even the best of translated works can do that sometimes. Also, Ben was humming. Keep that in mind.
Alright, so, point five, final thoughts. Well, I personally liked it.
Liar.
Yes, I am. I was really let down by this one. I picked this one because Ponyo had been taken down, and when I searched for Ponyo on Netflix, it said, you might also like Tales from Earthsea.
And it actually did look good from the cover, because the cover had a giant dragon on it and everything.
I forgot to mention this in part one, but I was almost expecting some Dragon Riders from Pern type action.
No, we didn't get it.
Nope.
Also, remember, about 56 minutes into this, Bobcat was unprofessionally looking for notes while humming. For a minute.
Okay. Anyway.
I'm not letting you forget this.
Remind me why we're friends again.
Because you can't get away from me. I'm inside your house.
Oh, okay then. Well, wait, then why are we doing this on two microphones?
Because you're lazy.
Oh, alright, fine.
I didn't say you were competent. I just said you were lazy.
So anyways. Yeah, give this one a miss. If you really liked the Earthsea novels, this probably did a disservice to the source material, but hey, you can get it on Netflix for free, so you might as well give it a shot.
No! Okay, my final thoughts. If you have 2 hours and some friends you want to watch this with, go ahead, because this is a very riffable movie. You can make fun of this movie, but otherwise, don't even bother, because it is 2 hours of your life that you're not going to get back, and it is really too boring and too poorly put together to care. Also, no. Bobcat messed around for a minute trying to find his notes while humming.
I would say that I know one person who I would actually recommend this to, but that's because to like this movie, you have to pretty much like fantasy tropes. It has sort of a very mythological feel to it, and not in a good sense. This isn't like some of the old Norse or Greek tales where there are interesting characters and such. This is like going to your library and getting the kid's dumbed-down version of a collection of ancient myths from...
You mean Aragon?
...some country. No. That's a disservice to Aragon. Or folklore. That's kind of the term for it. Folklore stories can get away with the kind of stuff this movie does.
Yeah, but
movies can't. Just to give you an idea, I watched Aragon. I hated Aragon. Although I do suggest it with the riff tracks.
Yes.
I would watch Aragon twice before I watched this one again.
And you'd waste about the same amount of time. This was a very long movie.
Well, here's the funny thing about it is that it was just slightly under 2 hours, so it's on the long end of movies, but it's not ridiculously long. This thing went a lot slower than any of the Lord of the Rings movies or whatever.
Yeah. It was just... It's a disappointing mess. Give it a miss if you ever get a chance to watch it. I do not recommend this movie at all. Ben was humming. Don't forget that. And that's all I have to say.
So, Burke, what are we reviewing next week?
You don't know and I don't know. We haven't decided. It's either going to be Skull Man, which I wanted to do, Squid Girl Invasion, which you wanted to do for some reason, you weird sicko. Or Gravitation, which we were actually suggested to do.
By somebody who hates us.
A lot. Mostly you, though, because I get to enjoy you being suffering.
Every day I'm suffering.
Remember, he was humming. Good night.
Good night and good hum.
Humming.